I know more about sports than you, good sir.
Tis to laugh. Dare I say my grandmother could outsport you any day of the week.
Gentlemen, may I borrow your ear for a moment?
But of course!
BetDSI.net is an awesome site where you can play for free and win real cash. Are you a sports nut with a lot of confidence?
Thoroughly.
Maybe you're a casual fan with a flair for the stats.
Guilty!
Put your knowledge to the test and win real cash at BetDSI.net. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it's just another way to enjoy the sport you already love. It's BetDSI.net.
Huzzah!
His city, his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Rudy, everything hurts. Hello, it's Thursday, April 28th, 2016. Even my mouth hurts. How is that possible? One moment, please.
Stop golfing so much.
I went to get fitted for a set of clubs today. By the way, thanks to my friends at TaylorMade. I took one of those 3 hours to get fitted for a new set of golf clubs.
Man,
it's like the third time I've done this. And it's an interesting process and everything, but, I mean, I haven't hit a ball since last September.
That's tough.
And working out is not in my vocabulary. Not like you. Like, you're like, you know, you probably go pump iron and stretch and do all that stuff.
I have a three-year-old.
All right, you lift a three-year-old.
I guess, yeah.
You lift Hazel every once in a while. You know, four more, three more. I don't do any of that stuff. So I went there this morning, and I hit... like, I don't know, a lot of golf balls. Because they hook you up, right? They put all the gear on you.
Right.
All the sensors. And then they show you your picture of your swing. And then they take all kinds of stats. And then they hit this, hit that, try this head, try this shaft, try this grip, try this, that. And then you got to hit all kinds of different clubs with all kinds of different things on it. And then they tell you this fits you.
Question is, how's your swing? Is it like riding a bike?
Well, I got it in the air. I was fine.
Basically, it's every once a year you start, right? You don't practice in between?
No, I don't go in. I don't practice.
There you go. Is that a weird practice? Word to say it on this show?
Practice?
Oh, all right.
It's practice.
Well, so everybody, most people have to practice.
I don't practice. Practice is when you're learning to do something. Once you know how to do it.
It's like riding a bike.
Just go play. Yeah, do you practice riding your bike? No, you just go ride it. You practice driving your car? No, you get in the car, you turn it on, you go. Go somewhere. It's not practice. You don't need practice for that.
Hmm.
There's lots of things in life you don't need practice for.
No.
Well, early days of marriage, probably should practice
some
that.
Some cars are harder to turn on than others.
This I do understand.
Well, I know a guy that can't turn his radio on. Is it your radio?
What? My radio?
Was it your radio you can't turn on or something?
No, I can turn my radio on.
Oh. Well.
I don't know how to use the TV, all the TV stuff.
You know all you do is ask.
We have Netflix. I don't know how to get it.
In your car?
No, in the family room, idiot. There's no Netflix in your car.
Oh, I was going to say, man.
That'd be high tech, wouldn't
right?
it? That'd be good. Well, they have cars now that drive themselves, right? So pretty soon, there's now a car that has, like, literally no steering wheel. Or maybe it does, but I saw the inside of it, and it's basically two seats, and they're lounge, they're stretch-out seats.
Mm.
So they got a footrest. So you're, like, lying down, and there's, like, a 48-inch television screen in your car. And the car drives itself. And you just sit in the back and watch movies or something.
I like to drive. Doesn't sound any fun to me. I like to be in control. That seems like
it's the longest driving trip you ever made.
I go with my father from Virginia to Colorado every year, so that's
nothing.
30 hours maybe.
Yeah.
Well, what's the furthest you've ever been? More than 30 hours?
11 times to Vegas from Toronto. 11 times.
How far is that?
4,000 kilometers.
Huh.
So depending on the speed limit at the time, because I'm going back to when the speed limit was 55 in the U.S.
Why do you drive?
On the interstate. Well, I used to go because I had a house there, and I used to go for the winter.
Oh.
And I needed my car there.
Sure, right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Right.
I mean, you could ship the car and get on an airplane, right. But, you know. And then I had my dog, too.
Do you like to drive?
I don't mind driving.
So my wife,
if I could just kind of push a button and sit back and watch a movie for 40 hours on my drive to Vegas.
You would like that?
Sounds pretty good to me. I'd be scared to death.
Me too. You're not in control, right?
No. Like, are you a good passenger?
No.
Does Hazel drive?
On occasion.
And have you sat in the passenger seat?
I have to close my eyes.
Yeah.
She's really good driver. Now, don't get me wrong. I know she's probably listening to this, and she's really good driver, so let me make clear of that.
Yeah, my wife's a good driver, too.
Yeah,
scares the hell out of me.
I like to be in control of that part of it. So,
we've gone on long trips, and she says, "Well, you want me to drive?" And I go, "Are you out of your mind?" I have a better chance of falling asleep driving the car than I do sitting in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
Because I ain't going to relax over there.
Right.
Can you sleep on a plane?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I can't sleep on planes.
Now, you got to remember, I was in the minor leagues a lot, and our flights were bright and early. You're talking what the earliest flight would be, which...
6:30 a.m.
Yeah. So, and then I have a game that night.
Yeah.
It's not the big leagues where you get to, you know... charter after the game, and you get to sleep in the next day.
So I fly London, England, and it's like 7 hours overnight, and they leave like at 8 o'clock at night, and they arrive around 6:30 or something in the next morning.
Do you do the bed, the big one?
No, I've never done that.
You never done it?
I've done first class.
Right.
And it had, lots of room and stuff, but it didn't have the actual bed.
Sure.
Wouldn't make any difference to me. So, like, I can't sleep on that flight.
Why is that?
I don't know. Well, I have insomnia anyway, but I can't sleep on planes. I guess I'm a little twitchy, and I have to have a window seat. I have to be able to see outside. If as long as I can see the ground, I'm fine. You put me on the aisle, and I get tense.
Well, I'm a bigger guy, so if I'm in the aisle seat, I usually get hit by the cart. You know, when the ladies push the cart by, it's weird. Yeah, even when I do start falling asleep,
I get that.
You know, I'd rather be in a window seat.
I don't think I introduced you. Did I introduce you?
That doesn't matter, does it?
It's Kevin Barker, by the way.
Hi.
It's a little late to say hi.
Oh.
Which is a little late to be introduced 7.5 minutes into the show, but that's what we do here.
That's right.
John Shannon will be in at the top of the next hour. Carlos Pena will join us. You spent some time with him. What, minor leagues or winter
ball?
No,
winter ball. He was on a different team. I saw him.
He
was a very good player, very good hitter.
Struck out a lot, though.
Of course. But, hey, you hit a lot of home runs. That's what you do when you hit a lot of home runs.
That's right.
You got to know your role.
How would you know that?
Ouch.
PJ Stock of the NHL and Sportsnet will join us later. You don't know anything about even home run hitters.
Well, basically, it's like I'm not even sitting here, right?
What's our – what? Yeah.
Huh?
What's our bet? We have a Saunders bet, don't
we? No, we do not.
Well, you came in here and just...
Stop trying to say that.
Rattling me. You're all over me like hair on a camel about Saunders and this and that. Can't hit. Moves his head. Blah, blah, blah.
I figured out you're starting to make stuff up.
Because
that's not... No,
that is exactly what happened.
Well, what's the bet then?
Well, I don't know if we had a bet. I asked you. I said, do we have a bet?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because you're wrong. You'll lose.
Well, even if we did have a bet, what was it? That he wasn't going to do what?
Over under zero home runs, and he's already over.
Oh.
You were going to take the under.
I did remember Mike Wilner saying he was going to hit 25.
I didn't say that.
No, Wilner said that.
Well, what is the relevance of what Mike Wilner said to this conversation?
Well, you're trying to say something about Saunders, and the only bet that I would have ever said would – Mikey's never hit more than 19. And he hasn't played but 82 games in the last two seasons. So, you know, let's not put the cart before the horse.
I understand that. But you were talking specifically about his head movement.
It does. It moves a lot, yeah.
And you thought that was a problem for him, and therefore he would not hit any home runs.
Now, the only reason I say that is I can relate. That's what I used to, how I used to hit. And when your head moves a lot, what's
well,
the ball do?
Well, we all know what kind of career you
the
have.
The ball moves a lot.
Yeah.
It's kind of like golfing, right?
It is a lot like golfing.
So when your head moves, the ball moves, even when it's sitting still, right?
Well, yeah, but imagine, you're trying to hit a ball.
Imagine when it's moving 95, you know, how much it moves. So that was my point. I'm not saying he's not a good player and he's not a good hitter. I'm just saying it's, from what I noticed, he's like me or the way I used to be.
All right. It says Carlos Pena at 410 doesn't say any other guests. Are we keeping Carlos for the entire hour or what? What's
they're pointing at me.
Oh, then I have to talk to him?
Wow. It really is I'm not sitting here.
He's not a... And, well, he is better than any guest you would get. I've seen the guests you get.
Ouch.
But
man, you're on a roll today.
No, but you're a co-host. You're not a guest. When you sit, when you're a guest, you sit over there.
Oh.
They told you to sit here. This means you're a co-host.
That's awesome. I'm glad I graduated.
Get paid the same, pal.
You do?
Yeah.
No, you don't get paid if you sit in that seat. Best I understand.
Really?
No.
That's a bad deal for you.
It is. Well, it's, you know, it's the experience. I want to be around greatness, and I figured, hey, why not go right to the top?
Don't you think you got to pay for that?
I have to pay for it, too? Man. So I have to pay to sit in this seat. Is what you're saying?
You go to school. Don't you? You pay to go to school. If you go to college, it costs a lot of money. That's where you learn.
Well, what's the going rate?
Well, you can't afford it. Oh. That's all I know.
Huh.
I'll give you some tips. Don't
worry. Nice.
Thank you. Here's the first one. Blue Boy in the fifth at Hialeah.
Oh.
There's your first tip.
Wow.
Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. Dan Shulman will join us later from Sportsnet and ESPN Network that's firing everybody or everybody's quitting. And then Alvin Williams. Boogie. Former NBA point guard and analyst will join us in studio. I like Boogie. Did you ever meet him?
No.
Haven't you? He's a good guy.
I would love to meet him.
He was point guard for the Raptors.
That's
for
awesome.
A number of years. When Vince played here.
Yeah.
Boogie was the point guard. And while Vince got all the attention, I'm not going to say Boogie's a better player than Vince Carter. I'm not crazy.
Right.
But he was a key piece of the puzzle. In any event, that's all coming up. Is Mr. Pena with us yet? Are we just about to get him? All right.
He's calling.
Perhaps since you have nothing else to do this hour, you might wander over to the little machine and see if you can find me a cup of something. That'd be very nice. Thank you. In anticipation of this this epic appearance by Mr. Barker, I have consumed all my tea already. I must be nervous or
you
something.
You are. Well,
you think that's possible?
People. Well, yeah, maybe.
Toronto Blue Jays have, let's see how to phrase this, stunk the last three games.
You're so nice. I bet that's the right.
Am I lying?
No.
No. Have they stunk?
They haven't been good, no.
Have they stunk?
Yes.
Thank you. That's what I said. They got swept at home for the first time since September of 2013.
Mm.
Now, the Chicago White Sox are pretty good. I like the White Sox. I think they have some flaws, but all teams have flaws. But their pitching staff is pretty good right now. Really good right now.
Well, they have Chris Sale, too. That's a true number one. Not a lot of teams have that.
Yeah. He is a real number one.
He is. They have Todd Frazier. I think that's a huge deal. Played with him when I was in Cincinnati. He's a, you know, he's everybody wants to be around him. You see Jimmy Rollins is actually having fun playing baseball now. It's because of Todd Frazier. That's what he brings. And, you know, everybody says, does clubhouse matter? Well, obviously the White Sox say it does because the last couple of years, to me, that's been the issue with the White Sox is the clubhouse. You bring a guy in like Todd Frazier. Everybody that has fun wants to come to the yard. They want to come to the yard. Whether they do, they bear down a little bit more and they want to hit the ball the other way. They'll put balls in play, play great defense because your leader's doing it, and Todd Frazier. So there's something to that.
We want to talk a little bit about Josh Donaldson's comments, being critical of some of his teammates. And is that a wise move? Let's bring the 14-year Major League veteran, MLB Network analyst Carlos Pena joins us now. Carlos, how are you doing?
Hey, guys. Really, really good to be with you this afternoon.
It's a good day to talk to you, too. We were just kind of morphed into a conversation about the White Sox and Blue Jays because we just finished this three-game series, which the Sox won all three of. and are on top in the Central and appear to me to be a very good baseball team. Not without flaws, but I could imagine, it's very early days, but I could imagine this team contending in that division and winning this division. Can you?
Yes. I mean, the way they've been playing, the way they've been pitching, it has certainly been a surprise. I mean, let's not, I'm not going to say that I picked them to be right where they're at right now.
Me neither.
But, wow, they've come together. I mean, they've really, that pitching staff has really held hitters at bay. They've done a wonderful job. You know that when you pitch, you give yourself a good opportunity to win. And that's exactly what they've been doing. And they just had a superb series over there in Toronto.
The Blue Jays, on the other hand, are scuffling now. I think three games under 500, if I'm not mistaken. And with the performance at the end of last season, well, the last 2 months of last season and then on into the playoffs, of course, anticipation was at maybe an all-time high, Carlos, in Toronto. And I was here for 92. Well, I was here for day one, but 92 and 93 when they won back-to-back World Series. I don't think the anticipation was as great in either of those 2 years as it is. It has been for this year. And they're kind of scuffling. And Josh Donaldson said, among other things, that his teammates, quote, need to evaluate their approach, unquote. I know you can't read Josh's mind, but what do you think that means?
Well, you would like to think that he's referring to maybe the way they're preparing for games. I don't think Josh would take a... a shot at any of his teammates if he didn't feel like it was necessary. The team needed a wake-up call. I think he means mostly, hey, the way we're preparing, we're not going about our business the right way. I think they have a very good relationship in between them as far as hitting is concerned, because you would say approach is a term that is used for hitting in particular. And I know that the team has been striking out a lot and just not scoring the same amount of runs last year was just ridiculous. It was out of this world. I don't think that you would expect any team to repeat such a feat. But, they're still not performing up to the caliber of play that we expect from the Blue Jays. And I think that's what Josh is doing. It's like, guys, we need to reevaluate, ourselves here, and because we're not playing up to our capabilities, not even close to – up to our potential. So let's take a closer look. What can we do? What adjustments can we make? Because I think that the key here, sometimes as players, we're like, you know what, we'll be fine. Yeah, you know what, we'll be fine. You cannot do that in this game. This game adjusts to you. They make adjustments. They're always looking, pitchers are always looking how to beat you. So you have to also evolve. And I think that's what Josh is referring to.
Carlos, we see Troy Tulowitzki. We've seen him here 60-plus games. When you have a superstar like that's struggling, and, you know, every time you watch him, you try to analyze him, at least I do, his swing looks exactly the same on every pitch, meaning if it's a breaking ball, he's never out on his front foot. He's never not getting off his backside. He looks comfortable. He looks like he's swinging hard. He looks like he's seeing the ball out of his hand. If you were going to sit down with Troy and have a conversation, how would you have – what conversation would that be like?
You know what, this is very important to me. When we talk about hitting, you know, remember, we've been in that situation. And we've been in the box, you know. And so it's very easy to sit back and analyze players now that we're not in the game. But at the very least, I know what it feels like to be in the box. And mostly my conversations, and you've said it perfectly, okay, his swing looks right where it needs to be. Looks healthy, you know, he's playing healthy. Okay, so now we have to go to the number one most important thing, and that is timing. So my conversations would be about timing, about, you know, you sometimes as hitters, we perceive pitches and speeds to be a certain way, when the reality, the truth behind it is that we're late, you know, and sometimes you're like, no, I'm on time. It's like, no, you're late. That's why you're falling off a pitch. That's why you didn't hit it forward. That's why you swung and went underneath it instead of squaring it up or getting on top of it. And it has nothing to do with a swing flaw. Rather, it has a lot to do with timing. I mean, you have one of the best examples there in Jose Bautista, who made an adjustment in timing and his whole entire career changed around.
You mentioned the, you mentioned the strikeouts, and the strikeouts are startling. I mean, the number of them. As startled as we were by a team that averaged 5.5 runs a game last year, which is what the Blue Jays did, I'm equally startled by the night after night, 9, 10, 12 strikeouts mm-hmm. by a lineup that should be good enough to put the bat on the ball. And I understand there's a bunch of home run hitters in here. But, you know, based on personal experience, and I'll ask both of you this question, I guess, is it difficult for a guy who traditionally is considered a home run hitter to pare down his swing, shorten his swing, in order to just get a base hit or put the bat on the ball? Is that a difficult thing to do?
Well, I think, again, like I just mentioned a minute ago, timing has a lot to do with it. You know, pitch selection has a lot to do with it. So it has nothing to do with it, their swing or their ability. It's just that their plan is totally wrong. So all of a sudden you're more susceptible to the traps that the pitcher sets. So it has a lot to do. And that's exactly what I believe. You know, when Donaldson goes out and says something like this, it's mostly about that. It's like, guys, we're not preparing the right way, okay? We're not watching enough video. We're going up there and just expecting things to happen. How about preparing? How about having a plan for the pitcher? How about knowing who's in the pen? You know, what is the pitch that he throws, and when does he throw it? What is his strength? What is his weakness? And this is where I'm going to sit, and I'm not leaving that spot until I get my pitch. All that stuff prevents strikeouts because you're going to put balls in play earlier in the count. You're not going to foul pitches off as often because you're going to square up because you're ready for them. Right. But it requires preparation.
Carlos, you said Troy Tulowitzki, it's a timing thing. Now, the opposite end of that spectrum is Russell Martin. He's basically, you know, looks to me like he's lost. You know that old saying when you're in a boat and you if you fell out of it, you wouldn't hit water. Well, I think that's where he's at. I used to be a hitter. You used to be a really good hitter. What's easier to come back from? Is it timing, or is it the way Russell Martin is now, where basically it's a blank slate, go get him and starting all over kind of thing?
Oh, that is tough. When you're in a situation where you just totally feel lost, this is the most difficult time because you have everything inside of you just stirred up. You're totally lost mentally, emotionally. Baseball has a tendency to do that to us, you know, when we go through difficult times. So it is so difficult to just step back and say, wait a second, what I'm doing is not working. All right, it's really not working. So I need to just get out of this emotional roller coaster and say, I need to make an adjustment here. I'm going to simplify things. And again, I go back to the preparation. You know what? This is what this pitcher throws today. I'm going to eliminate that slider low and away. I'm not going to look out there. I'm going to raise my sights. I'm going to bring those sights in. This is the box I want, the middle in, upper part of the box. That's where I want. I want to raise my sights so I don't chase those things in the bottom of the zone that are bouncing, and I don't get fooled by those pitches. If it's close, I'll take it. But I'm going to wait for my pitch right there. I'm going to gear up. When I get it, now I put a good swing on it, and I'm done. You know, can you simplify things like that based on good information? Absolutely, giving yourself a better chance to be successful against whoever you're facing. But you have to do your homework. But you have to step back and get away from that emotional roller coaster and kind of take a deep breath and say, this is what I'm going to do today against this pitcher today. I'm getting 3 pitches to hit, 1 per at bat, and I'm going to put them in play, put good swing on them. I'm going to put the barrel on them. And that's the end of it. That's how much simplification. That's how much you have to really just keep things at its bare minimum and just go to the necessary things, the most elemental things in order to have some success.
With Carlos Pena, 2 really interesting teams that emerged last year. 2 organizations with young teams who built steadily and efficiently. And one we saw coming more than the other. But the Chicago Cubs and the Houston Astros both were playoff teams last year. And similarly, in my opinion at least, similarly constructed in terms of patience, timing, draft choices, those kinds of things. So far, the Cubs are red hot. They look like the real deal. It's very early. You know, 20 games in, 25 games in is too soon to project anything. But the Cubs have played well. On the other hand, the Astros have been horrible. What's the difference between these two teams?
Well, I think right here, you made an incredible point. You know, obviously the Houston Astros, in contrast to what we were talking about, the Chicago White Sox being at the top of their league, their division, we did not expect them to be there. By the same token, we did not expect the Houston Astros to be a last place team, right where they are, you know, just way below 500. We didn't. Now, execution has been the difference. So talent-wise, we see that, okay, there's no reason why the Houston Astros should be in last place. None.
No.
However, that's when the reality hits. It's like, if you don't execute, if you don't go out there and make the plays, if you don't go out there and take advantage of the pitches that you get to hit, you know, if you don't go out there and execute the pitchers if you're in the mound, then you will lose, regardless of how talented you are. So sometimes it's not your skill level. It's, are you executing? Do you have the right strategy? I mean, that to me is huge, because being out of the game, I can now have a little bit of a broader picture. Instead of drowning in a glass of water like I used to many times when I was a player, when I was struggling, I wish I could have been able to step back and say, wait a second, let me take a very objective look at what's really happening. Not emotionally, but objectively. And I would have saved myself a lot of slumps. And I think that's exactly what's been happening with the Houston Astros. They've gone out there. They've had the wrong type of mentality, the wrong type of a strategy. They haven't made adjustments. You can't just roll out there and think that wins are just going to happen. You have to come out there with a plan. This is the big leagues. These kids are good. These guys are good out there. You can't just expect that wins are going to come. You have to prepare and be ready for war every single time you step between those lines.
So it raises this question for me. I understand if you're in a hitting slump, for example, you know, there's a coach there whose responsibility it is to work with you, at least if you ask, and sometimes even when you don't ask. What's the role of the manager with a team like Houston that is not performing? I mean, in your opinion, and I don't recall exactly how many managers you played for, but I assume over the course of your entire career, a bunch. And probably a lot of them had different points of view and different perspectives on how to manage. What's the and I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus here. What's the role of the manager when a team is going this poorly, in your opinion?
I think the role of the manager is extremely important. And now, I don't mean by this that a manager needs to go ahead and call a meeting. Sometimes that doesn't go so well, you know, when managers call meetings. But it is the manager's job to prod, to push the right buttons, to speak to the right guys, to try to get something going. And usually what would happen is that the leader in the clubhouse would call the team together and say, okay, guys, you know what? We're swinging out of the zone. We're striking out too much. You know, for example, we're not waiting for our pitch. Why don't we have a collective approach against a certain guy? Let's make sure that we stick with it. You know, let's start getting prepared together. Let's start getting here early. You know, whatever it is that the issue may be. But a manager just understands the dynamic of a clubhouse, and he's able to prod and to push each button here and there to promote some type of movement. Because doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same result, that's the definition of insanity.
Yeah, that's stupidity, yeah.
Exactly. So it comes a point where, you know, I'm not saying the manager needs to stand in there and give a speech and give an emotional rah-rah speech. No, but he should be able to understand how to get the best out of his players and motivate them in a way that is not totally so obvious that it's almost desperate, right? That's where you don't want to get to that point, but at least you should be able to move and to promote a change and adjustments to be made. That's the job of a manager.
Carlos, you're the perfect person to ask this question. I had Cliff Floyd on the station earlier, and he said yes to this question. You played for Joe Maddon. The Cubs are off an unbelievable season. They made the playoffs last year. The Washington Nationals last year was everybody's sexy pick to win because of their starting rotation. They bring in Dusty Baker, and all of a sudden they're in first place. They're taking off. They're having a great time. You know, all of their best players are doing exactly what they're supposed to do. My question is to you, since you played for Joe Maddon, does a manager really matter that much?
100%, absolutely yes. And I think this goes back to what we were just speaking about a minute ago, right? We were talking about how a team like the Houston Astros are in last place, how skills only take you so far. because eventually everybody's good in this league. You know, really, everyone in this league is good. So if you are just, if you just believe that skill is going to take you all the way and that you don't have to prepare, then you can just roll out of bed and hit, you are mistaken. And eventually it's going to catch up to you. It may work for a season, but it's going to catch up to you. So managers like Joe Maddon have been able to do exactly what we talked about. Just motivate the players, get the best out of the players. And it's almost, there's an ease about it. There's no desperation, no panic, more recognizing, okay, there's a situation. This team is doesn't have the bounce. This team, it's flat. This team is not coming out with energy. Okay, let me do the necessary things. Let me have the right conversations. Let me push the right buttons. And next thing you know, you have this team firing on all cylinders again. This guy is an absolute genius when it comes to that, speaking about Joe Maddon. And then you see what the Nationals, hey, it was the same talent last year, exactly the same talent. How come the Nationals are in first place?
Well, we know Dusty's personality is definitively different from his predecessor. I mean, he is a much calmer, more assured kind of guy. And I would assume that's the fit that they need, especially after what they had went through last year.
Perfectly stated. Perfectly stated. And that's exactly what's been happening. You know, next thing you know, this team all of a sudden is playing up to their potential.
Yeah.
This is where we expect them to be. When you see that team on paper, this is where you expect the Washington Nationals to be.
Yeah, well, they have the talent. We know that. Like, the only thing about Maddon, I mean, I respect him like crazy, and so does everybody in baseball. And I don't, you know, with due respect, I don't think you have to have played with him to understand he's good at what he does. But he is not conventional. And he's playing players out of position and moving guys around in the lineup. I mean, he'll do some crazy stuff. As a player, I mean, when you go to the ballpark, I don't remember how much he did of that in Tampa, but does it drive you nuts? Does it keep you on your toes? What was your reaction when you went to the ballpark? I mean, were you afraid to look at the lineup for fear that, you know, he'd say, Carlos, you're pitching today?
Yeah, you said, does it give you confidence or drive you nuts? Does it keep you on your toes? All of those.
Yes. Yeah.
All across the board, it's a yes. And sometimes it does drive you crazy. You're like, oh, my goodness, really? I mean, I've hit leadoff, and I never thought I would ever hit leadoff in my career. But one of the things that I like is the fact that he's not afraid to do that, which, in a way, it gives everybody else permission to get out of a box. So even the players perceive this certain amount of freedom that they can be themselves because Joe is being himself.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I get it. So this is not about this rule following. I have to follow these rules. No, being innovative. Innovation is promoted here. Coming out with new ideas is promoted here. And not only that, it's applauded. I like that. I like the fact that there is an environment where it's conducive to growth. As a matter of fact, it's celebrated when there is a bright idea, and we're not afraid to try it. That's an environment where players are able to thrive because no longer they're locked up in a cage. They can go out there and just truly enjoy. But it's because of the permission that the manager gives them by the way it acts, just by example. So it's a very interesting dynamic to look at it. He may not say a word, but when he does something crazy, like being, you know, the whole entire, you know, a guy from the outfield, play the five-man infield, like, and just be like, you know what, this is nothing. This is what I'm doing. Got 12 fielders, 5 infielders, which, you know, it's not that crazy, but it's still something that a lot of people would not do. You're like, wow, my manager doesn't care about what people think. He's just trying this out because that's his gut feeling. That gives everybody else a certain amount of confidence that, hey, where I'm at is different. We're not cookie cutters. We're not trying to follow tradition here. We're trying to be innovative. We're trying to be brave and courageous and just break ground. We're trailblazers, and that's that exudes a lot of confidence.
One of my favorite managerial quotes was from Yogi Berra, not surprisingly, but it's not one that you hear all the time. After a loss, I guess, I don't know whether he was with the Mets or who he was with, but he was managing at the time, and his team got blown out, and somebody asked him, you know, how did you think the game went? And Yogi looked at him. He said, well, I managed good, but boy, did they play bad. And you know, it leads me to wonder, well, how can you, you know, what is the actual difference between one manager and another one? And I don't think there's a guy out on the edge more than Madden is. And while you may not agree with it,
exactly,
it's hard to argue it when you look at his success rate. And you can't win unless you have the good players. And I guess that's what I was trying to get at. I mean, the players win and lose much more than the manager does. But boy, there's something to be said for a guy who you know, has at least competitive, if not winning teams year after year after year after year. And Madden is that guy. It's not conventional, but it seems to work.
You said, that's great. That's a great word, leading. You know, I would say leading edge. He's very leading edge. And the thing is, you make a very good point. Players are the ones that win the ball games. Players are the ones that lose the ball games. So sometimes I'm not even concerned too much about a manager making the right pitching move. You know, I think sometimes even, you know, anybody could from you know, have the obvious pick. Okay, this is the guy that I need to bring. I need to go in and get, you know, go to the bullpen because my pitcher's struggling. You know, those decisions are pretty standard.
Yep.
You know, in general, they're pretty standard. I think where the managers just, you know, pull out of the pack and all of a sudden have this, like, okay, this person is special, like I would say Joe Madden is a special manager, is behind the scenes, prodding, touching the right buttons, you know, and that stuff that we talked about is the effect that has on the players that's important, you know. So not so much the play itself, but the effect it has on the players.
It's all fascinating stuff. A lot of deep thinking here. I don't know whether we convinced anybody of anything, but
yeah,
no, we had a few laughs.
Philosophical on
yeah,
the audience today.
Carlos, thanks so much for taking time for us. We enjoyed it, and maybe we'll give you a call soon and try and chat again if it's okay with you. Thank you.
It would truly be an honor. Thank you. It has been an honor, so thanks a lot.
Carlos Pena, now with MLB Network, and of course a long-time veteran catcher, 14 years in the major leagues.
First baseman. Yeah.
Not a pitcher, though.
No. Not even with Joe Madden.
24 before the hour. We'll take the break. You and I will chat a little bit. You follow the NFL? You going to watch the draft?
Just the Broncos.
You going to watch it? Bronco fan?
Yes.
Where did that come from?
Well, I've been a Bronco fan forever.
Well, that doesn't mean anything, but usually you would have grown up in the Denver area, have some connection to it.
No, I lived there for about 12 years, so I fell in love with them.
Oh, so when it was a kind of an adult?
It was.
Fascination?
100%, yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll address that when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Before the hour, Bob McCown, Kevin Barker in our Toronto studios. So this striking out thing, what did you say? The Blue Jays are averaging 9.5 strikeouts a game?
9.4, 217 punch outs, 757 at bats.
That's bad.
It's a lot.
Only Houston is worse. Interesting. We talked about how bad they are.
Maybe that's why they're in last place.
That's why Houston's in last place. Maybe it's a miracle that the Blue Jays aren't in last
place. Well, the American League East right now is not very good. I mean, there's not one team running away with it.
I don't think it's not that they're not very good. I don't think we know that yet.
Right now, I don't think
a lot of teams basically playing each other
are consistently playing with all facets of the game, meaning defensively. Everything's not clicking at the same time. That's what the Blue Jays are doing. One time they pitch really well, they don't hit. One time they hit a lot, they don't pitch well. They're always playing defense, you can say that. They're not taking their bats on the field when they're playing defense, which that's something you can hang your hat on. But let's face it, the American League East, it gets down to one thing. That's mashing the baseball. You can say all this thing about, hey, they got the best starting rotation or whatever. It's about scoring runs in the American League East because of the short porches where you go. You have to score runs. And if the Blue Jays don't start doing that, it's going to be that up and down all year.
Yeah, but if you're sitting there waiting for the home run or trying to hit the home run, that's how you strike out 9.5 times a game. And you were the king of that during your career.
Yes, I struck out a lot. But I'm just saying putting the ball in play and getting hits. I'm not saying the home run. You don't have to do that. Extra base hits, that puts a lot of pressure on a pitcher.
But there's a lot of little things this team isn't doing. They're getting runners on base. They're leaving runners on base, and they're not hitting behind the runners. They're not advancing runners. Now, you don't have to bunt in order to do that. You know, you got guys on first and second with nobody out. All you got to do is go to right field. That's all you got to do.
Well, sometimes.
Get a ball, go to right field with it.
Sometimes certain players should bunt. I believe it. It's not small ball. That's not what it is.
Yeah, but all I'm saying, you're not wrong.
Right.
All I'm saying is this team is allergic to the bunt for whatever reason.
They don't have to be. Sometimes when you're struggling the way the Blue Jays are, scoring runs, doing whatever, putting the ball in play, sometimes you go outside the box a little bit. You know, when it calls for it, guy on second base with nobody out, hey, there's nothing wrong with laying it down to get a guy on third base. Chances of you scoring that run with less than two outs is better than a guy on second base with one out, because you have to get a hit. It's that kind of thing.
I understand. Let me give you this theoretical, though, because this has happened more than once this year and will happen many times this year. First and second, nobody out. Edwin, Jose, Tulo coming up. Which of those three is most likely to try and go to right field? Usually by the time you get to Tulo, it doesn't matter anymore because there's two out.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bautista likes going in the hole between first and second on the shift. Now they're not doing the shift the way they used to against him because he started doing that. Edwin, when he's hot, he's elevated. When he goes the other way, it's in the air to right center. That's as far right as he goes. 100%, but he's not that kind of hitter. I'm saying the certain guys. I'm not saying everybody. 2-3-4 is not the problem. And when you get to Tulo, it's like you said, it's either two outs, he has to have a hit, and I don't want him bunting. He didn't know how to bunt. Why would he bunt?
No, I'm
he's
not
either going to swing
that.
Or he's not going to. So certain guys, like Pilar, Goins, you know, certain situations, that's what you do. You have to put the ball on the ground to move the runners. Don't do that all the time, but it puts pressure on the defense. That's what it's all about. When you're striking out 13 times a game, that's not putting pressure on the defense. How do you do that? When you have a chance, make the defense get you out. That's how bad things happen with the other team. So – certain times. I'm not saying all the time, but...
No, I understand that. I mean, and it's not, you know, look, I don't want to compare, you know, minor league baseball to major league baseball, but, you know, first and second, nobody out. If I'm the third baseman, I'm creeping in a few steps. You know, it depends on who's at the plate, granted, sure. But I'm going to be aware of the sack bunt.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It's just, you're going to be aware of it. Check the Blue Jays, opposition of the Blue Jays. When they get runners on first and second... That third baseman is never inside the bag.
Okay, I'm going to tell you right now, if I'm Kevin Pillar and I go to the plate and it's first and second tomorrow and there's nobody out, I'm bunting. I don't have to look over and have the third base coach tell me to bunt or look over and have John Gibbons give me the sign to bunt. No, I'm not doing it. I'm doing it because it's the right thing to do for the team at the time. I think that's what Josh Donaldson's saying. You go up, know the situation. You put yourself in the right position to put your team in a chance to win. And if that takes bunt, I'm not a bunter either. I've never bunted. But I'm saying certain situations for certain guys, that's what they do. They don't have to be told.
Good teams,
I'm sure that when Kansas City's on the field, people aren't telling them to move a guy over. They do it because it's the right thing to do for the team right time. Exactly right. That's all I'm saying.
And all I'm saying is it's not like the third baseman is sitting halfway between home plate and third base waiting for that bunt. And they've got a rotation on where the shortstop's covering third and they can get the lead runner there. That's not happening. Nobody expects the Blue Jays to lay down a bunt first right. and second, nobody out. You have the opportunity. I'm not saying you're going to get a lot of hits, but if you hit a real good bunt, you can beat it out.
100%. And another example is Tampa Bay's having trouble catching the baseball. Why not put pressure on them? Make them get you out 27 times instead of striking out. That's all I'm saying. The more times you put the ball in play, whether it's a bunt or not, put pressure on that defense.
Well, they get Tampa this weekend, right?
Yeah, they do. That's what I'm saying. That's why I brought it up.
I didn't think you brought it up. I thought I brought it up, but that's okay.
Well, it's your show, so I'll give you credit for it.
Don't you forget it, either. That was fun with Carlos Pena.
It was. He's the best.
He's a deep thinker, man.
He is. Well, you got to be deep to rake, man.
Way too deep for me.
He had a lot of bombs.
What are you doing tomorrow?
I'm
babysitting.
Working.
Oh, you're working?
Jeff Blair, yeah. 11 to 12.
How's Blair's voice? I heard him this morning.
It's a lot better. It's better than it was. Well, you can understand him. That's all that matters, right?
Barely.
With him and me on the same show, it's
nice.
Oh,
my God. It's like going to the United Nations. You need an interpreter on the radio.
Oh, boy. It's like I'm not sitting right here. You know? Yeah.
No, I know. In a minute, you won't be.
Oh, man. Thank you.
That's Kevin Barker. PJ Stock, Don Banks next hour, Dan Shulman, Alvin Boogie Williams in the final hour. Come back. It's prime time.